welcoming in writer Colin Fleming. Hello there, Colin.
What's up, Kimbalicious?
Well, I'm a little nervous about today's topic because I know it fairly well. We're talking about age today.
You sounded nervous. Sometimes you sound a little more nervous when I suggest topics. I think, uh-oh, maybe I should put him at his ease. And I think, no, it'll be fine.
Well, age is an interesting thing because there are so many, I think, falsehoods, misunderstandings, as well as a lot of tired cliches that go with it as well. Well, let's start with misunderstandings. What are some common misunderstandings about age from your perspective?
What gave me the idea for this segment was I have this erstwhile friend, and I was on Facebook a few days ago, and I see that he was saying again that he's old, and he's not doing it in this jocular way. This dude is always saying that he's old. He's technically of an age where he could quarterback the New England Patriots. So conceivably, he has, if you're just doing the math, 50 years of life in front of him. I think he did a lot of drugs, so probably less than that, but still, like, a good chunk of life. And he was quantifying his oldness based upon, this time, the fact that he's a professor, and his students didn't know anything about the band R.E.M. And I find that that's such a weird litmus test for you yourself being old, because we can go find some octogenarian, and we could tour the rest homes of the Northeast Corridor and be like, hey, you rocking out to some CPE Bach today? And they'd be like, what are you talking about? I've never heard of that guy. I know Johannes. It's like, well, I don't know if you even know him, but you probably don't listen to him. And it's just this weird qualifier. And it got me thinking that age is something in many ways that we decide. You're not going to, like, never die, in a sense, unless you're an artist. But it's an excuse we use to underwrite the things that we do not wish to put in practice in our lives. We all know that person who's only 70, 75, whatever the age might be. Maybe they have anger issues. And you say, perhaps work on that. And they say, no, I'm too old. And yet Dylan is out there doing what he does in some town tonight for 2 hours and 20 minutes. And you think, like, okay, you're 70. Do the math again. You could live to be 90 if you really take care of yourself, maybe even more. Think of everything that transpires in our life, right? You're probably doing it right now in the past 20 years. All of the changes. You can have two kids. They can go to college. You can get divorced. You can bury someone. You can live in three different houses. And it's all fairly reasonable because that's how life is.
It's so interesting, too, because I think there are people, and we both know them, everybody knows them, who seem very old and have in some ways closed a lot of doors, even in their 30s and 40s, and then plenty of people walking around in their 80s, constantly open to new experiences and looking forward, not behind.
There are all kinds of ways to be old. One way to be old is to spew vitriol 50 times a day on social media about politics. That is a way to, you might as well take a bath in turpentine, because that will age your soul in a way that your body doesn't even really age until you're dust. And I think it's a conscious decision we make. When you seek to grow and attempt to learn things, you develop a child's capacity for wonder. And I don't know that you can be old in the sense when you do that. But at the same time, you look at the math. I tend to view this as time. We transition from age to time. How much time does one have left? Now, the supposition when we say that we're old is that we don't have much time left. That's the root supposition of the complaint. Okay, so think about all the rock stars who died at 27. Brian Jones old when he was 26, or Jimi Hendrix when they were 26 because they had less than a life of a year left in their lives? So if we're 50, if we're 60, you think, like, okay, well, Hendrix, Jim Morrison, they weren't old at 26. I'm this age. I could conceivably max out for this many years. What does that mean? I mean, you think about something like today, I'm at the Starbucks. I wrote a 2,000-word story in my head. How long did it take me to write the story? I don't know. second, 2 seconds, literally 2 seconds, because what can happen inside of our minds is different. It's like Doctor Who, his little phone booth he rides around in. It's bigger on the inside than the outside. So we control time on the inside, whereas outside is the march of the tides and time and tide away for no man and all that jazz. But again, a lot of this is a decision we make, and that decision often entails ruling out excuses and saying, no, it's not too late to do this, because the corollary to it's too late is, what's too early? I don't know. Is it ever too early to work fitness into your life? And so if the one is true, the other has to be true. And save for the whole death thing, I don't really see where age comes into anything.
We're talking with Colin Fleming here on Downtown. I do think as you get older, you get a little bit better, although it's a struggle for everybody, I'm sure. You get better at living in the moment and not constantly looking forward, at being able to appreciate the time that you're in right now. And there are blocks of time. Not that I didn't have a wonderful time in my 20s and early 30s, but I look at that now as like, whatever, I was still trying to figure things out. And maybe I'm unique in this. I don't think so. I had no idea what I was doing, certainly into my late 30s or early 40s. I'm pretty sure I don't know a lot more now, but I'm okay with it. And that makes time slow down a little bit, at least in my head.
Not for me, because to this point, really, my life has just been largely hellish and tragic. I haven't enjoyed a second of it since I was a kid. I've gone through things that anyone who reads the blog knows what I'm dealing with on a daily basis, and you certainly know as we've become friends over the years. So what I am trying to do in some ways is position myself for the lengthy future, for when the future and the present overlap, they superimpose. That's what I'm looking for, and I know what I want to have in my future, and part of the reason I do some of the things I do, which I think also keep me in the condition I'm in, be it physically, be it artistically, is in order to have that future. So, for instance, I'm in the monument doing my thing on whatever day it was, Sunday or Monday of this week, and someone called me who was also climbing, just the ones for them, referred to me as a student. That's kind of an odd thing. You think that would only happen if you were on a campus or whatever, but maybe they were from Europe or something like that, and they just think that anyone who looks a certain way would be a student. I was wearing a hoodie and whatnot. But I think if I didn't do something like the monument, if I acquiesced, if I gave in to what I really feel like anyone else would give in to, that would tell in my face, and that would tell in my eyes, it would tell in the space around my eyes, it would tell in how I conducted myself artistically. I feel like when I come on something like your show, I always sound ebullient, and I'm not actually ebullient with what I'm dealing with in my life presently, but when I'm working through ideas and discussing them, there's an overriding quality that takes over, that does have energy to it, that has intellectual energy to it, and I think a sort of spirited energy, and that comes again from marshaling my will and my sense of endurance and my courage to be a certain way in my life that was a conscious decision. I was born with certain things that enables that decision-making process, but I feel like if it's something like the monument, just on a physical level, if I didn't do that every day, I would backslide, and I would be someone who really labored to do it at all. So I say to myself when I'm really low, it's like, look, you don't want to get in a position where you can't do this. You can't do this like you want to be doing this, because that's going to impact you in other ways. And it tells quickly, I think. I feel like if I was to maintain what I do now on a daily basis, that I could be doing it. Think about any kind of training you do. I could be doing it when I was 80. But it's when we stop doing something,
right.
It's not just the physical, it's more the mental. That's when it log rolls on us, and you never get it back once you stop, or it's very hard to restart it again.
And there are people out there that we see who I think are weighed down heavily by time and by age, and they could be young, they could be older. Look, in the end, time's going to get us all, age is going to get us all, but do you think that for some people there is the ability, in a sense, to control time and age, or at least our perception of it?
Certainly. People spent a lot less time watching reruns of the American version of The Office, they'd have time. I've done, for instance, I've done nothing today, but I'll tell you like a very small rundown of my day, talking to you. When I'm done talking to you, I'll record a podcast with someone else talking about Billie Holiday. I just came up with 10 op-ed ideas. I walked 3 miles, I climbed once, I wrote a 2,000-word story. How long did all of that take me, or is it going to take me in the end? Less than 2 hours. Now, again, your ability controls parts of that, but I'm done with the story at 9:30 in the morning, and it's not like I started it at 1 in the morning type of thing. I'm at Starbucks, and it's 7:30, and I think, you have this idea. Now you have the story. Go home and write it. So, yes, on the inside, we do control things, but I don't have, for instance, me personally, I don't have any downtime, and part of that is because what I do, a lot of it's in my head. So as we've discussed before, I can be talking to you, and I can be coming up with all these things right now that are going to go off in other directions. But I think a lot of people just sit there, pop the mouth open, and veg out. And before you know it, there goes 4 hours out of the day from Twitter, some new series that dropped on a Friday on Netflix. See, I don't do that. And when I do a much smaller controlled version of that, I'm doing other things at the same time. And then the corollary to that is people get offended and they think, or they lob these charges of, well, you must be manic, because it makes them feel better about what they're not doing. And it's like, no, I'm just not even maxing out. I'm operating at 10% capacity, because what happens if I go to 100 and I'm still in the same position? Then what do I say to myself about how the next day might be different when I know I've already gone as far as I can go, which is something I probably need to work on, and something that also could serve me well when I hopefully arrive at where I'm trying to get.
Reading our communication and talking about what we would discuss in the segment today, and you mentioned this, what age can be for you? What do you mean by that?
How do you mean that, what age can be for you, in terms of, I don't think it's in any way much more usually than an excuse. And I think we are in the excuse age. What we do, though, is we play dollhouse with our excuses, with our shortcomings. We dress them up in these clothes as to say that there's something else. And if someone else raises the point that maybe that's not strictly true, that there's something else happening there, we use terms like attack, assault, verbal abuse, because someone has interjected some truth into our truth-free arena. And so I think age is just a lot of times, again, it's that notion of a decision. I think of someone, like, think of how exhausting it must be to travel around and be Bob Dylan or Paul McCartney. I use Dylan especially as an example because he does it every night. He's literally on his never-ending tour. And he's wherever he is, in Cleveland, Ohio tonight, I don't know where. And he's going to do his thing. He's not like some big, burly guy, right? I think that's like physical wear and tear on you. And for whatever reason, his talent probably dictates some of it. He made up his mind that he was going to stand outside that space and time continuum. And eventually, he will succumb at whatever age he physically succumbs. But because of what he really encapsulated, he's also going to be alive in 5,000 years.
So. Colin,
it's a very different thing.
So many people use age as, I think, a checkpoint. I should be doing this by such and such an age. I'm a failure. I haven't achieved this. And look where I am. But how can we flip that? How can people let age work for them instead of against them?
There are all kinds of examples that anyone could take the time to read about of people who did whatever at whatever age. But you can always just do these little shortcuts in math. You can look at age any number of ways. Look at the Beatles. So the Beatles, 1963, 1969, 7 years, they're done. None of these men really did anything artistically outside of the 20s in their lives. They lived an awful lot in those 7 years. But Ringo Starr, when I see him now, he is still living off those 7 years. And so if you're 50, do your math, 50 to 57. Bottle it down to 7 years, whatever it might be. This notion of societal expectations of what we should be by a given point smacks often of, not to be mean-spirited about this, but a kind of ignorance of not being aware of precedent and supportive, inspiring examples. And I think what happens is we use that again as a way to sort of get in our own way the only person you should be answering to, the only being you should be answering to in this life is reality. And reality has its cousin of truth and beauty, but that's who you answer to. It's ultimately all that matters is the big R, not what your Aunt Bertha thinks about the fact that you're going back to school at 38. And you're a good person to have this conversation with, because I'm sure listeners probably know parts of your own life trajectory, and I've thought about them because there's some overlap with my life, are singular. They're different than a lot of people, right? You have a kid at an age where his age and your age, there's more of a gap there than is often the case, and you're a happy man. And I've always thought to myself, like, Kimball, that's a good case in point of something that works that maybe wasn't what everybody else was doing, and it worked best for him.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. And, you know, becoming a dad at 55, usually that's reserved for rock stars, and I'm not. But I'm so much better equipped to do that and have been now than I would have been certainly in my 20s and 30s and probably in my 40s as well. And I guess that's an example of age working for me at the other end, too. I think one of the worst things we've ever been sold as human beings is this notion of retirement. I can't imagine anything that's likely to bring about instant or nearly instant death than retirement, and why anybody would think that's a good idea. What do you retire to, or better yet, what do you retire from? It's nothing I ever wanted to.
It's a strange age, too.
Yes.
It's like an age like 65, right, that really needs to be reset. That was more like the age you'd think people would retire in pioneer days. But even after that, like Ben Franklin was going strong, 65 is, you can be doing a lot in your life. I almost feel that that's a version of middle-aged in a way. The only time I really think that I'm around truly antiquated people sometimes is when I am at the 1:30 concert on Friday afternoons over at Symphony Hall. But that's not even when I see people. It's when I'm going to my seat, lonely person that I am, by myself, and you see all the walkers lined up, all the rides lined up in the hall. And then the second part of that is when I go in there, and there's always going to be some older gentleman or woman who is going to call me, like, young fella. And I'm like, this rocks. I never feel like surprised. Like, you know what, Patriots, I'm doing well in the Monument. Maybe like a fullback type of situation, a third tight end. You never know.
No.
We're the same age pretty much. But that's really the only time. I told you about the guy in the Monument who was a veteran. I couldn't tell if it was early Vietnam or maybe even the Korean War. And he had his cap on, his Marine cap. He looked like he could like deck somebody 20 years his junior. And he's saying whatever he's saying to me, saying it's a neat trick that you can do this no matter what age you are. I'm thinking like, hell, you're in better shape than a lot of the zaftig youths I see going up who look like they're going to hurl.
Well, and again, it depends on what you do. If you're out doing a job that really requires a lot of physical labor, yes, I can understand you wanting at some point to leave that behind. But yeah, I have none of those skills. So doing what I do, whether it's teaching or whether it's talking on the radio, I like to think, I'm sure I'm going to hit a point where this is no longer true, but yeah, I feel like I'm doing my best work right about now. And I feel like in 5 years, I'm going to be doing even better. I can't imagine doing something and knowing deep inside, yeah, I was really good 10, 15 years ago. Now I'm going through the motions.
Professional athletes now routinely not just play until 40, early 40s, sometimes later. Chris Chelios, Jaromir Jagr, right? Hockey. Hockey's hard. Hockey is the most physically demanding sport there is to play, in my view, because of the frequency of the games. Football is once a week. Hockey is, to anyone who's played it, they know just how difficult a single shift is. So if you can play a sport professionally at an elite level, look at David Ortiz, big guy, 162 baseball games. There he is in his early 40s a few years ago. Think about the other things. If you're a painter, if you're a cardiologist, right? At what age do you hit your prime as my cardiologist? I don't know, 55? Like, right? A friend of mine is a contractor. You know, I'm Hardware John. And he said to me that a lot of people buy their forever homes in their mid-50s. 50s or whatever. I don't think he's just saying that to me to give me some hope with the situation I'm in. But I just feel that, yeah, it's changed. But a lot of it comes down to, like so many things in this life, not maybe your fortunes or your happiness. I don't really buy into the bromide that that's a choice, because things have to go well for you, and you have to position yourself in a way that you can maximize that wellness. But with age, I think a lot of times you can control things. You can. I'll tell you, when I used to drink, and I'd have the 20 units a day or whatever it was, and I wouldn't become inebriated, which was a problem. When I just stopped drinking one day from a Saturday to a Sunday, it was the start of a new week, that changes you. That physically changes your aging rate. I'm convinced of it, giving up that. Looking into how much sodium I intake now. Living, granted, like a monk in many ways, but I'm routinely picked out as someone who's like, hey, are you a student around here? I was like, no, I see guys my age sometimes, and it's like, oh my goodness, you bald load. I know, that's wrong. It's great to be all those things now. But really, I think I see how they live their life. I see the photos of the food they eat on Facebook. It's like, yeah, that's going to do it, my brother.
Well, and again, it's a choice. You mentioned the exercise and the workouts, and I try to do that every day, but I've had a little Achilles problem, and every once in a while that'll flare up, and I can't get out and do what I like to do every day. And boy, I do feel old, I guess, then, not because I can't do it, but because I miss that and the doing of it, the getting out there and walking. Again, it's where I process things. It's how I clear my head. It's how I plan for the coming days and weeks. And when I see people that don't do that, who are young enough to be out there on a regular basis, I feel like, man, why don't you just lop off 20 years of your life?
Well, there's the physical component, but I think also it imputes itself into our brainwaves. That time. Now, I mentioned that I only walked 3 miles today and only climbed once, but not an only for a lot of people, it's an only for me. And if I don't do that, I am in a worse way. My little mentee, Emma, is struggling with some stuff, and she takes no exercise. She's 15 years old. And I texted her recently, and I just said that inertia compounds. It does. It does compound our problem. And it's not necessarily about getting the heart rate up to 180 or whatever it is and to enhance your fitness. There's something physical in the brain. You're giving the brain a workout, too. And the brain is part of the body, but it has a larger function in the body. And I really think that just like we can measure our heart rate, there are things that transpire along those lines in the brain that come with some form of not just the exercise, the reflection of the exercise, the ordering, because I know when I pop out the door, I kind of take a deep breath and I think, okay, who do we want to send these ideas to? What are the next 4 stories we're going to be working on? It's just a way of walking around where you are a checklist incarnate, and you're also losing some of the stress for the duration of that time that you're on the go. And I think that helps too. It's, again, that decision. It's not whinging on Facebook about how people who are 20 don't know who REM is. Because, you know, frankly, no one knows who anything is for the most part anymore. It's just like, we're all dumbasses. I mean, it's horrifying the things you can name. We've talked about Orson Welles so many times. Do you know how many people out in the world have no clue who Orson Welles is? Like, most?
I do, but it pains me to think about it, and I hope I don't have to deal with those people very often.
You must. I'm listening to me, like talking to the choir here, right? You must experience this all the time. You've accepted it, but you can do the same thing with your contemporaneous friends. And you think, like, oh, we're at the Thanksgiving party. It's like, this jackass has never even heard of this. How do you not know this? You don't say that to that person. You just internalize it, and you get sad about it, maybe, and frustrated. But it's not certainly like a youth thing. And what people are doing right now with this whole okay boomer thing, that's not some like clever retort. It's a defense mechanism to cover up the shortcomings of ignorance. It's like someone who writes something and they just violate the laws of grammar because they don't know the laws of grammar. They're not aware of them and doing this regardless. What do they always say? It's like, nah, it's like my art is too rarefied for that. It's beyond that. It's like, no. You're overcompensating. And that's what I think a lot of age-wise young people do, and it's aging them before their time.
It's not regardless, Colin. I think it's irregardless.
Is it? My bad.
One of my pet peeves
It's been a long day. I've had a lot of peppermint. I haven't had any woven wheat. You know what that does to me?
I do.
I just listened to, probably like you, a boatload of Quiet Riot. So I have a lot going on.
There you go. Well, you get yourself a Triscuit or two and you'll feel better and you'll feel younger. You are the master of your fate, Colin Fleming.
Yes, I hope so.
All right. Thank you, my friend. We'll talk next week.
All right, that's it.
Colin Fleming, Tuesdays. You're on Downtown.